it's $1,200 a night. You know, I could do that basically after my little ones go to sleep. When do I have to take the jobs? Do I have to work every single Wednesday night? No, you take the job when you've got time. Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss. Mark, have you heard the Abraham's Wallet episode that was posted? By the way, we never do this, that we should probably make this practice. I'm Steven, I'm your host, and with me is Mark. We're financial planners, and we're going to talk to you about money and running your home today. Listen, Mark, have you heard the episode that's about you can afford to have more kids?
I actually listened to it this morning while I was doing my squats.
Okay.
I listened to it and I thought, this one is a top 10 for me.
Yes. I find exhortation to be a delicious spiritual gift. And I felt that people were exhorted by listening if they listened to that episode. And I had another couple of thoughts about it. It's such a rare topic, but so needed. And I had one of these thoughts listening back to that wonderful episode. One, how do you feel about this statement? Family begins when you have children. And until you have children, you're not a family. You're just a couple wandering around. How do you feel about that?
I don't agree with that statement, but...
Okay. I just want to throw out a polarizing idea, see how it grabbed you. Okay.
We talked about it in the episode. There's people out there praying for kids that don't have them yet.
Yeah.
And I would call that a family. Now, there are options for them to bring kids into their family.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say they're not a family, though. I don't.
Okay.
That's too much. Let's not be clickbaiters.
I've gone too far, as I'm wont to do. Now, I when I was listening to that, I was also thinking, for everybody who kind of is walking the same road we are and trying to get their head around a biblical idea of family, I would just encourage everybody to put a family-centric presence forward at your local church. As you and I discussed offline, I did some poo-pooing of the local church scene on that episode, just because the local church scene typically doesn't do a lot of shouting about have more kids. I don't know. That's just the way that it is. But it strikes me that those of us who walk down this road, we can put our hands in our pockets and kick a rock and think, well, I don't know why they didn't really talk to dads much to this weekend. But in our places of influence, we should speak up and we should represent. You know, I don't know that works for my family. You know, this, I don't know, the retreat they're suggesting, et cetera, because I will be there for my family, et cetera. I just think I don't want to take my marbles and go home when it comes to the local church. I would rather influence the local church so that it might also get its head around a biblical concept of family. What are you akin to that?
You know, the main teaching pastor at my local church that my family attends listens to us talk on this podcast pretty regularly. So he has said to me in the past, like, you know, I don't get this from you, but I think Steven sometimes really doesn't like the local church. What is up with that? And I think some of the reason he says that type of thing is because, and you and I have both been a part of the giant flashing dog and pony show megachurch scene.
Yes.
But for me personally out here in Utah, man, I hear it all the time from the front is get to work, start having children. If you're single, get married.
Oh, that's great.
And so sometimes, you know, you've accused me before, Stephen, of being the one who always wants to hedge our statements. And I don't think of myself as a particularly conflict averse guy.
No, I don't either.
But when it comes to local church stuff, maybe it's because I'm in a missionary setting. I just feel like, man, the people I'm around, I don't agree with them on everything. Yeah, we have plenty of arguments about this or that. But on the family thing, I have never once felt like I am being told to hand over the keys to some clergyman. So I think that that's maybe a little foreign to me, but I certainly understand, especially when I come to Cincinnati and maybe I go to like a big, you know, mega church thing that I wouldn't necessarily recommend. That scene, very different. And I think your warnings would hit real differently if I was there.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, moving right along to my next topic that I did not warn you about. I'd like to talk about Hunter Biden for a second. Can we do that?
Oh, no.
Yeah, we're going to. So let's talk about Hunter Biden being pardoned by his father. There are political and governmental machinations that this affects, and you can raise your libertarian fist all you want, and you can do that. There's places where you can do that.
Are you about to praise Joe Biden?
No, I'm not.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was a family leader that was putting his family ahead of the needs of his country.
Thank you so much, Mark. You have crystallized the kind of bleeding heart commentary that we have heard about Joe Biden. I'm thinking that I can make these comments because this will be coming out at the very, very tail end of his administration. We might even have a new president by the time this episode airs. I'm not here to grind axes about Joe Biden or his politics or anything else. I just want to talk about the fact that this dad pardoned his son in a very famous, high-profile way that we're all aware of, okay? So, yes, you are describing what people are saying. Oh, what a wonderful, loving father. I think we can definitely see that he's not been a wonderful, loving father just by Hunter's life. But I just want to say that I think what Biden did by pardoning Hunter is emblematic of a move in American culture where the best loving thing you can do for a child, period, is to indulge them and to surround them with pillows, whether that's financially or in their self-discipline, et cetera. I'm here to tell you, and this will be where the YouTube short begins, the story about Hunter Biden and being pardoned by his president father is awful parenting on display. So Joe says he's a family man and family is important to him. I'll tell you what, Joe, you're blowing it as a parent. We want responsibility for ourselves. We've talked about that before. We also want our children to learn responsibility, and they cannot learn responsibility without having consequences to their actions. It's all over the Bible that you let your children have negative consequences for negative actions. If your child acts negatively, bad behavior, and you let it go, or you prevent them from feeling the negative consequence of their actions, you do them a grave disservice. So let us all agree together. We'll not learn any lessons on parenting from this little story here. I did some premarital talk this week with a really sweet couple. They are two widows who have found each other. So they're mixing a family with older children. And there is a tendency that when a child has gone through some hard things, as their children have, they've lost a parent early, or is a special needs child, or is a child that deals with disease, or we can talk about Hunter Biden's case. I don't know much about this guy, but I know that he's lost family members, immediate family members, and so he's had some pain in his life. There is a tendency to indulge children when they've had some pain and to have too much sympathy for them. And when we let grown adults move back in, for instance, without paying rent, or we decide to pay for the phone and the car of a child kind of indefinitely through their 20s, et cetera, we are sealing them into protracted immaturity. And this will definitely affect their prospects for marriage, for instance, because it'll change the kind of person that they're looking for. It changes the way they see themselves. What can I handle? What kind of responsibility can I take on, et cetera? It's a bad scene. So rant is almost over. Hunter Biden has some special needs. We know that he has some drug problems, et cetera. And those things come at least in part because he continues to not taste the consequence of his actions. He's probably very happy with his dad in the short term. You rescued me, Dad. Again, let's throw Dad a party. I think he will resent his father when everything is said and done. Why didn't you help me develop self-control and self-responsibility? Why did you preclude me from experiencing the pain of my sinful errors? So I just have to throw this out. I mean, it's just such a huge story, and it's right down the middle of what we love to talk about, which is building a successful family in God. And I always have this reaction when there's a little bit of like sympathy claps from the culture about some story that's happened. And I think to myself, that's not the way that an Abrahamic family would work. So I'm just calling that out and just saying that's a bad move. I hope we all see that.
It's so funny because my wife was having a conversation this week that we were talking about this morning on the way home from the gym. She was talking to one of the nurses at the pregnancy resource center that she works at. And they were new baby, like dealing with it. And they were not really asking for advice, but we're saying kind of like, you know, it's just hard because she started describing their sleep training pattern, which my wife said, oh, you're doing baby-led sleep training where the baby trains you to sleep.
And that's exactly right.
We started talking about more parents than you think are doing toddler-led discipline, which is basically, if you think about it, like toddlers, they would kill each other if they had the tools.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to murder because I want the toy.
Yes. And
those are the humans that grow up to be the Hunter Bidens. So I don't know if there's one
thing. Right, people. Listen to this man.
It starts with infants.
Yes.
And you're not going to get everything right. I didn't get everything right. We've had a week of discipline, new scenarios that I never thought I'd be reviewing security camera footage for my children, but I was this week. Thankfully, it was relatively harmless. But I just think the skill you must develop is a willingness to be disliked and not have your kid even understand the why. That's a huge epidemic right now. But we're getting off track. So I could talk about that. We'll do it soon, but not today.
Wow, that's great. And you have to be willing to meet out pain and sit there while your child's in pain and go, this pain comes from my hand to them. And this is the most loving thing I can do for them. So protecting our children from the consequences of their actions is not loving. So boo on you, Joe Biden. Not for your politics in this case, but for your parenting. Your greasy son needs a spanking and not a free pass. Okay, now I'm done with that. Let me get us into to today's issue that we'll talk about a little bit more. I've got in my hot little hand 16 side hustle ideas. And the reason that I have them is because long ago in the carpool school pickup line, my friend and pastor, Mike Newman, and Abe's wallet listener, I'm not even going to tell him that this episode's coming. I want him to find it organically, and I want his head to explode. But Mike Newman said, you know what I think would be interesting? For people who are on ministry staffs, and we know plenty of those, there's always a squeeze. There's always a financial squeeze. They're not handing out million-dollar salaries at churches unless you're Creflo Dollar. You're running said ministry. Then you can kind of write your own check, it seems. Is that a dig at churches?
No, you're allowed to dig at the prosperity gospel folk.
Okay, but there's a squeeze. I know firsthand. So he said, I wonder if you could talk about side hustles that would work specifically for a pastor or somebody that's on a church staff. He's like, my schedule can be flexible through the week. It's not flexible on the weekends. Several of my nights are spoken for, but I wonder if we could talk about side hustles. Before I get into it, Mark, when do you think we last covered the topic of side hustles?
I mean, the thing that comes to my mind is like blog post number 10 where I wrote some blog in 2017.
Uh-huh.
That said, like, never mind the side hustle, go for the productive hobby.
That's right.
Is that it? And yes. Then I'm sure we turn I back in the old days where I used to just read my blogs on the podcast and they were like 9 minutes long.
Yeah.
That might be the most recent time we've talked about side hustles.
I believe that it was. And that podcast was made, get ready for it, 5.5 years ago.
Yeah.
In June of 2019. So that's crazy. It's time to address side hustles once again. I know you have many thoughts and personal examples on the subject. Here's what we're talking about. We're talking about something that you could give, say, 5 to 15 hours a week on, something that you wouldn't necessarily have to clock in for, something that would be a fairly low bar as far as getting into it. So you wouldn't have to spend $10,000 to start doing the job. It's something that you could pick up, on your schedule. You could say yes or no to work that came along and make yourself some extra green, a little of that cabbage, that folding cabbage.
Don't bury the lead though. Like, okay, just the people are here for what they're here for. You're a pastor, you're a minister. You've got people that trust you.
Yeah.
How do you make extra money? That's why we're calling this episode The Sale of Indulgences. Right?
That is so smart. That was the obvious thing that I overlooked.
Oh, that wasn't on. Okay,
we review
each other's notes, and sometimes we don't. But today, I guess we haven't. So,
oh man,
go ahead and go through
your
16 side hustles. And I'm joking about the sale of indulgences.
Okay, I've got 8 from contributors, our online. Community is Ur. That's where Abraham hailed from. So that's where we hail from. Number one, you mentioned indulgences. This isn't that, but it's specific to a pastor. We have, I'm just going to give first names and I apologize. I didn't ask anybody's permission for any of this. I apologize to anybody. If you hate it, you let us know and we'll edit or remove this episode, but I don't think they will mind because these are their businesses. So we have a dude named Brandon. Brandon is a pastor and he thinks to himself, well, I do pastoring for my people. There are people who are not my people that could probably use some spiritual direction. So Brandon is with his spare time. So think not his 40, 50 hours he's given to his local church. With his spare time, he has a side hustle being a spiritual director. I think that's a very interesting idea. That is like a personal pastor, right? It's something like being a counselor, but you're helping somebody with spiritual growth. I think that's a very interesting idea. He has set up something. He has set up brandonroytaylor.wixsite.com. So I'm going to throw out everybody's website that's doing this stuff. I think that's an interesting idea for a pastor. I'm not here to help you find clients, by the way. I'll just tell you that these are hustles that guys are doing. Number two, a newcomer to is a very bold, entrepreneurial, spirited dude named Andrew, who he does a couple of things. In his family, he said he has 7 3D printers. And they have happened upon a product line that people like, and it's nail polish trays. So like it's a place to organize all your nail polish stuff, place to put your hands, I guess, when you're doing your nail polish. And that's at polishedprints.shop. You could do those. And he also does game design at buythebook.games. So those are two different ideas. One is find a niche product that you can hawk online. Or I think that the fact that he invents games and sells them is genius. If you have any creative bone in your body, you could self-publish. You could sell a self-published book on Amazon of your poetry or whatever you do. But you'd have to take it seriously. You'd have to organize and put it in a form that can be sold, et cetera. So I'm throwing Andrew out there. Yes, sir.
Andrew, he caused me some consternation when he came to Ur, because we always ask people to do a little intro video of who they are. And the first sentence out of his mouth was, "It's good to be here in the land of the moon god worshipers."
Yeah.
I got multiple texts like, "Hey, man, what's up with this guy?" And I had to stop and think, like, what's going on? He's a pastor. He's probably not a pagan. And then it occurred to me, Andrew's probably just smarter than the rest of us. And
exactly right.
He heard Ur, he thought Chaldeans. And I guess he knows some things about the Chaldeans background. And on off he was to making a pun that it took even those of us who created Ur a while to understand what he was saying. So, yes. Andrew, you're smart and funny. I bet you'd make great games.
Yeah, Abraham did not live in Colorado Springs, which did not exist, nor did he live in Jerusalem. There was no Jews at the time. He came from a godless place called Ur, and our online Ur is not a godless place. It's a redeemed, wonderful place. Okay, number three, Chris has had an interesting hustle for a while, which is bouncy house rentals. Now, this is the highest bar to entry of anything that we're going to describe, and it's still not too high, which is, he's like, if you can get your hands on a truck and a trailer and $2,000, you could buy yourself a couple of bouncy houses. If you rent them 5 times, they're paid for. So he says you could tell your friends, you'll let them use it for free if they'll give you a 5-star Google review. Get 10 of those and you're on your way. Because when people start searching for bouncy house rentals, they'll find you. He mentioned Inflatable Office is a place that will make you a website. You can host there for $40 a month. He says it's excellent for incorporating your kids into work. He does all the drop-offs and the pickups with the kids. He does it when it's convenient for him.
Do they do a demonstration bounce? Like, let me show you the, depending on how much air we put in here, we can get a 2-year-old at like 14 feet.
That's probably part of their service that they offer. Nice. You know, stake them into the ground and you turn it on and away it goes. He says the caveat is that it's weekend heavy, number one, because that's when people want to rent these things. So he's like, I'm going after church services to collect them often. It's also a March to October business. Like, people aren't doing these in the dead of January. And so there's a question, you know, can you move your day off? And he says, you can definitely make $150 a day for like 2 hours of work. So that's something that Chris has done for a while. I never even considered it when he brought it up. Next, we've got Vijay. Now, Vijay is starting a small business. It's not profitable. It's just something he's tinkering with. And then he's making, you might know this better than me, Mark, he's making like jarred oatmeal kind of muesli recipes, and they're organic and they're good for you. And is that the idea?
Yeah, and it's funny because I saw Vijay's update this morning. He posted it a while ago, and he's had some success, early success with that business. And the funny thing is, at Ur, all of us wannabe business consultants were like, I don't know about this one, Vijay. Food service and production, that's a tough business. And he said, I'm going to do it anyways, an early success, so... sometimes one of the keys to entrepreneurial success is saying, you know, to heck with the haters, I'm going to pursue and test out my idea. And it sounds like Vijay, with his oatmeal assembly and delivery business, is having early success.
Yeah, we have, it brings to mind, we have a good friend named Monica. She lives about a half mile from where I'm sitting right now in that direction. And Monica loves baking bread, and she is very artistic about it. You know, when you can get the bread to like do a pattern on the top and all that stuff, she's great at making bread. And she has little ones in the house. She doesn't make bread all the time. She doesn't think, I have to make bread by 2 o'clock on Thursday. She makes bread when she wants to and when she has time. She has developed a text and email thread. And so she'll just shoot out, guess what? I've got 20 loaves of this 5-grain bread that I do. Who wants it? It's $10 a loaf. And it's like, bam, it's gone. And like instant money. she's got her list, and then she makes it whenever she wants. That's great. So you can, you know, whatever you're good at, pies, biscuits, scones. I guess I'm naming all baked goods. Okay, next. Albert has just mentioned this. Very interesting. Albert likes sourcing these kinds of things. His brain is always working on this. And he found a dude that is just does event bartending. He does not bartend at a bar. He only bartends at like a bar mitzvah or at a wedding or at an anniversary party. And he says at these things, this dude told him it's $300 to $1,200 a night. And Albert goes, you know, I could do that basically after my little ones go to sleep. And Albert is a very happy to talk to a stranger. Albert's a very outgoing kind of person. That kind of thing, slam dunk. And again, it's when do I have to take the jobs? Do I have to work every single Wednesday night? No, you take the job when you've got time.
That one also dovetails nicely with the complimentary business of selling illicit drugs, because a lot of times your bar customers are also your dope customers.
Okay.
I'm really contributing to this one.
You really shot my wheels right off, because I was going to make a caveat about this could be morally problematic for the pastor who's doing this on the side, but I don't think you're going to do anything to do with Mark's business that he just ginned up.
No, I, you know me, Steve, I'm not one to poo-poo the reasonable and responsible consumption of an alcoholic beverage here and there.
Yeah.
I always think to myself, man, it would be tough to sit in a bar setting where people are almost always going to overdo it.
Yeah. But what if you're at the manual quinceañera?
Yeah. You know what you could do? Is if you think, gosh, all of these sound awesome, what I would give to have some way to talk to guys who are doing this, how does Albert navigate this? You could just come be a part of and you would be able to talk directly to these guys. So we give you access. We're out there. We're brewing these ideas like a crew together. So
Yeah. We're hustling to put these ideas together. Okay, here's a hustler. You know Ben. And Ben was a handyman as a side hustle, and he would go out, you know, could I fix your toilet for you? You need a drywall patched. And he was a handyman as a side hustle. Guess what? ... He and Alex now run this big construction company doing like major home renovation projects. And what he did was he developed his skills as a side hustle handyman. And now it's his career.
I always wonder with handyman side hustle, do you have to know anything? Like, cause I was up on my roof doing electrical work yesterday. I knew nothing about what I was doing, but I was YouTubing, and you know, most things you can figure out with a little bit of YouTube. Can you just get into the handyman business because you're strong and willing?
I think you can, and I'll tell you why. Number one, the best skill that you could have as a handyman is dadding. If you've dadded for a while, you know your way around a couple things. You could probably change out a receptacle, and you know, an electrical receptacle in the house. Well, let's start with turning the fuse off so that we don't die, and then you take it apart. And as you say, when you run into something, you look it up on YouTube. Oh, I think I can figure that out. You do it once. And as a handyman, you can say yes or no to the projects that come in, right? So somebody's asking for, I think the beams of my roof need to be replaced. That's not really me, lady. But then this is a lot of handyman jobs, is a little old lady that goes, my toilet is running and I don't want to call the big company plumbers. Will you come out? Yes, lady. I'll come take a look at that. It'll take me 20 minutes. You know, that's a win. Number six, I'm going to throw yours art here, Mark. You had an idea for a funeral thespian. What kind of side hustle would that be?
No, come on. That's a half-baked idea.
Except that we now know that someone does it. You can rent yourself out to be a fake mourner for people that nobody loves. But
wait,
that's
a real? Somebody is doing this now?
Didn't somebody send you that in
No. Well, maybe. Yeah, someone, I haven't caught up to it if they did.
Okay. Someone definitely sent to you in Ur that someone has done this for real, which is wow. You can rent me out. I'll come mourn at the graveside and at the funeral, and I'll wear black, and you'll see me wiping a tear or two away, and it will seem that your hateful uncle was truly loved by people. Okay. My last one from Ur that I'm going to throw out is Jordan is... this might seem obvious, but he's a wedding DJ on the side. You might have thought, well, if you're going to do side hustle, that's another one where the startup costs are not huge. Get yourself speakers, a little rolling desk. You could hang a monitor from it. And again, you're not in a seedy environment. You're at family events. Being a wedding DJ is what Jordan does and makes good money every time he books something. Okay, let's start into other ideas. I'll do one and then you can chip yours in. We go back and forth until you're out of ideas. Number one, I wish I knew this guy in my town. Specialty tool rentals. So I have a friend named Tal. Tal has all sorts of weird, odd tools and everybody borrows from him. Tal, I need one of those like industrial staple guns because I'm repairing a piece of furniture. And this is like the staple gun that like keeps upholstery on your furniture. You have one of those? Oh, of course I have one of those. I'm using a hammer drill to put a screw into cinder block. I don't own one of those. You got that, Tal? Yeah, of course. Wouldn't it be great if everybody knew a guy who could just rent it out specialty tools? So chainsaw, I don't need a chainsaw all the time, but we did have a big old tree fall over in my backyard. I do need a chainsaw right now. How about a snowblower? Don't need that. Don't want to own it, but could use it occasionally. How about a brush hog or a tiller or a table saw? If you have any of those things, you could start being known as I'm the one man tool rental place. That seems like a pretty good deal to me, especially if you're a do-it-yourself or fix-it guy who maybe has some of those things already.
Well, I'm going to recycle an idea that I kicked out back in the olden days in that episode. But
great.
I am a firm believer in seasonal arbitrage. So whatever your local, it used to be Craigslist. Now it seems like it's lots of Facebook Marketplace. In Utah, we have our own classifieds that are called KSL, and it's like the local news station runs a classified.
Okay.
That's what everyone uses. But I'm gonna pull a prop for this one. But
oh,
I was on these classifieds the other day, and I saw somebody posted this set of Ben Hogan never used Apex forged irons, a set of irons, and I said those are amazing. And I looked on eBay, and people for good condition sets of these, we're paying $400 and $500 because you can't get them anymore. They stopped making them 10 years ago, but they're a classic.
Okay.
This guy wanted $75 for his irons.
Hello.
So I bought them and I could have just made money right away. I could have fire sold them at $300. But you know what? Golf clubs tend to sell best in the spring when people are starting to think about golf.
Smart.
So if you have some storage space and you have some knowledge in whatever category. I used to do this with bicycles. I've done it with ski gear. Anything seasonal, at the end of the season, that's when you can score the deals because people just aren't buying their new kayak when the lakes are freezing over. And so if you have a place to buy cheap and store, that's how you make your little storage space a moneymaker, because all you have to do is wait 6 months until the sun comes back out. And now I've got something that has appreciated just due to seasonality. So the more specialized knowledge you have, the better. So if you're like super skilled, if you can repair things, you know, you can make a killing.
Yeah.
But if you have some specialized knowledge in basically any category that has a seasonal component to it, you can make money just by buying at the end of the season and selling at the start of the season.
You used to do this with watches. You could recognize when there's a high-end watch that's a bargain. I could see the same watch and go, well, that's an expensive watch. I would never touch that. And you would look at it and go, well, that's actually worth more than that. So I'll buy it and I can sell it and make a couple of $100 on it. So yeah, that's using your specialized info. The other thing that you brought to mind when you said fixing things, it's such a simple thing. I have an old pair of, how can I make this quick? I have an old pair of shoes that are now worth a lot. I could not replace them unless I spent $300, but they cost me $50 at the time. And I want these shoes to look great. I want them to look new. Well, to have someone custom like clean my shoes and get them back up to spec is like a 6-week waiting line. And I got to send them to somebody in New York. I've looked it up. It's so hard to find. Why isn't there somebody locally that's like, I clean shoes. I'll take any sneaker. I'll make them, you know, crystal white again. I'll bring the soles back up. That seems like such an obvious business. Yes.
This is a side hustle that happens in my house. I have a shoe cleaning kit, and I told my oldest daughter, you know, it's worth $10 to me anytime you want to, you can do it on your own time. If you see my sneakers that are just, there's dirt on the sides and stuff, I'll pay you $10. You can do it anytime you want. Spruce them up. And I was like, I'm not paying you if they're not perfect, but if they look brand new, $10 in your pocket. And she has taken me up on that and figured out how to make some money cleaning my shoes.
That's great. That's great. Okay. Here's another idea. This came from the fact that when I was in Florida at my father-in-law's place, that place needs to be sprayed for mosquitoes when we're there. So not 12 months a year, we need a one-shot spraying of mosquitoes. Guess what? You call mosquito squad or whatever. You can't do it. They will only do, you got to have a long-term contract. Well, I went and bought the stuff and it was less than $100 to buy a machine with the fogger, et cetera. And now it's just sitting there. And I think to myself, if I didn't have to do that myself and somebody told me it will be $100 for us to spray this place before our all family vacation, I would have paid it. It cost me less than that to buy all of the stuff, but a one-man mosquito squad. We look for people to do this when we do, with my wife's company, to do events. If you're doing a wedding out on a lawn, it's actually very hard to find somebody to go, look, we just want you to spray this whole place down one time. Anyways, that's an idea I have. I don't know that happens in Utah. In Cincinnati, the mosquito squad and whoever their competition is, they do quite well. So I'm thinking you could be a one-man mosquito squad. You can make your prices whatever you want and say, I'll come wherever. I'll be done in 20 minutes. You do that twice and you're rolling in dough. So anyways, that was the thought I had, a one-man mosquito squad. Did you have something to say?
No, I think that's a great idea. It wouldn't work in Utah because we don't have mosquitoes.
Okay. Here. Up y'all's. That's what I have to say about that. Okay. Mobile pet washing or car detailing. A high schooler could do this job. Mobile, that is, I will come to you. I will wash your pet on site. I'll clip toenails on site. I'll brush your dog's teeth on site. I will, do a flea proof your dog on site. I will detail your car on site. Let me ask you this question, Mark. Is detailing high-end cars, is there a margin on that? Is there any profit involved in that?
Yeah, it's so funny because listener of the podcast and friend of ours, Blake Staley, started his detailing business. I think they started primarily doing mobile detailing. And that kind of like Alex and Ben bloomed into a business where now they'll still come out and clean your minivan if that's what you need. But most of their business is like, we're steam cleaning the engines of Ferraris in our customized, super high-tech, fancy shop. And it's a whole business that supports a group of people now. So,
there you go.
But it started out really similar to what you're describing, which is a lot of elbow grease and hustle.
Yeah. I mean, you could buy $50 worth of detailing products, start screaming, put it up on to everybody on Facebook that you know, or wherever you meet people. Hey, we do this. My 18-year-old wants to do this, or I'm a pastor. I want to do this for a day a week. come on. It seems obvious to me. Okay. Next one. If you look up side hustles online, you'll probably come by this one, but it always strikes me whenever I do this, how much would I have paid to have somebody do this for me? Very low startup costs. That is pressure washing. Maybe a seasonal business, but holy cow, you can get a high-end pressure washer for $250 and you can go out there and charge a couple of hundred dollars to clean off people's sidewalks, power wash the front of their house, their decks, for goodness sake. So, and it's not a hard job to do. It's just time intensive. Maybe your back because you're bending over the whole time. But our good buddy Tim Allen did this as a full-time job for a while. And he was like, I made really good money and I was tired of wearing waterproof galoshes all the time. But yeah, there's money just sitting right there for anybody who's willing to put in the work. This is actually an idea that came from but when it hit me, I thought that's not just a side hustle. That's a business. If anybody wants to start this business, which is putting your name out there as home theater and audio installation. It seems like once a year, there'll be some detail thing that will happen with our sound system in our house or getting the new component to work with the very complicated, amplifier relationship of whatever we've got going in our house. To have somebody who is an expert that puts that stuff in and organizes the way everything's laid out. Well, we simplified it. We clip these cables together. Now it all makes sense. What a great service. So I throw that out. I'm thinking to myself, well, if I put 2 hours of effort in, I would understand all that there is to know about this. I haven't. I don't. But when people buy these, you go to Best Buy and they're like, we can install this for you, just $100. What if that was somebody's whole deal? Is they become the expert on that stuff? Seems like a winner.
Yeah, okay. I think that was my last kind of contribution was basically there's a catch-22 with any service business. The good side is it's like raise a shingle and
yeah.
As soon as somebody hires you, there you go. Usually very low startup costs. You know, maybe if you're a pressure washer, you got to buy a big expensive setup. But if you're good at bookkeeping, most people aren't, you might be able to keep the books for a couple of local businesses and charge a decent rate for that. And that's the good side of it. The downside is you actually have to work pretty much every hour that you get paid for. It's not scalable. But if you, I often tell people this, if you are in a job that you perform a service that is valuable, there's a good chance that there's people who don't hire your company that would find that service valuable as well. And usually there's an opportunity to do some side gigs. So, our friend Jeff Davenport, who comes on the podcast all the time, and you, Stephen, you have side hustled this way in your life, have done speaker coaching. Now, my thought is if you're a pastor listening to this and you're the main teacher speaker guy, you might be able to help some executives in your city refine their presentation and then speaking style. That's something I would freaking benefit from so much anytime I have to stand in front of a group. Thankfully, I have Steve Emanuel who does his best, but he's working with what he's working with. But that's a really valuable service. And, you know, there's all sorts of pastoral skills that not every pastor certainly has. But a lot of full-time ministry people might think, well, I don't do accounting or I don't do engineering. So I promise you, if you just step back and think, what do I do all the time that I'm good at? Who might that serve that's totally outside the realm of church life? There's probably a lot there, whether it's creative services or production or speaking. Just offering yourself as a service provider can be a really easy side hustle that can generate significant extra income.
That's great. I want you to give a little bit of advice to somebody who has a little trickle of side hustle money coming in, how to handle that money. What I mean is it's so easy to just take extra money as if it's found money. And then just spend it on whatever's in front of you. Would you recommend a kind of a profit first approach to these people? How much do you think needs to go back into the business? Do you have any broad advice on what to do with income that's coming in from a side hustle?
My first recommendation is probably the opposite of what you would expect from a financial planner. I always tell people, don't go out and set up your business entity and spend money on an LLC and a name and a logo and a lawyer. Don't do any of that. For almost everything we've mentioned, you can side hustle as a sole proprietor. It'll just flow through your personal tax return. No problems. As long as we're not talking about something super high risk where there's like legitimate liability concerns.
Right.
So if you're doing like rattlesnake petting zoo, then we need to
do something different.
Yes. But don't go out and like think. I hear people all the time, clients that we work with, are like, hey, Mark, we're starting a business. We're going to do, dog biscuit sales in the neighborhood. And so we've set up an LLC. And what insurances do we need? We're thinking we're going to fund the kids' Roth IRAs with us. And I'm like, bro, calm down. We're going to just focus on testing the waters. And that's the nice thing is it's good to get excited about this stuff, especially if it's something your whole family can participate in. But prove it before you go in and invest a ton of money in one particular idea. So don't get too carried away with the early stuff. Start with the minimum viable setup. And then whether you reinvest that money into the hustle. So like with my watch flipping, I started out with like $25 estate sale fines and I could flip them for $50. And I kind of hustled that up. And then I was like, I think I'm going to buy this watch. It's $250, but I think it's worth $400. And before you know it, you get into the like $1,000, multiple thousands of dollars thing. And every time you take that next step up, you're going, well, this feels like a huge risk. But in some sense, it was all money that was ginned up through the hustle. That's a capital intensive way to earn money.
Yeah.
If you're doing the service thing and just coaching someone on how to give great presentations, you might not need to save a bunch of money and redeploy it into the business. And if you're honest with yourself, like this is a side hustle, I'm not trying to turn this into a brand, then you probably don't need a website even. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But you might just be helping people who are relationally connected to you and that's all you have time for. So just match the size of the investment, even the time you spend working on the business instead of in the business, to the amount of money and what you're trying to make this thing into. Don't let one get out ahead of the other. I mean, I talk to people all the time who have made that mistake, whether it's in a side hustle or, you know, they've got a big cool property and they're thinking, well, this is our farm, so we're going to spend a ton of money at the end of the year. I'm like, you don't have a productive farm, you have a hobby. And you know, which is fine, nothing wrong with that, but if your goal is to make money, then make that paramount. And you said profit first. That's a great system for kind of making sure you pay yourself first. There's a lot of great ways to operate those types of side hustles, but probably a future episode to describe some of that.
Last year, we did a series on protecting your five capitals. And in that series, you had said it's a good thing to maximize what you can do income-wise. That might seem obvious, but a lot of people get a job and then they shrug their shoulders and go, I guess that's what I make now forever, instead of actually doing some work to, okay, hold on a second. Now, what are my possibilities? So if you have flexible time, as a pastor sometimes does, and you have a need to fill a financial gap, holy cow, a side hustle might be just the ticket for making your life work. And there's so many possibilities, especially with the connectedness that we have right now in society. And it's so easy to get the word out about what your thing is. So if you're thinking that might be good for me, we just encourage you to be bold, get the word out there, use your networks, use your bro networks, like the Abraham's Wallet Network, the Network, to say, hey, this is what we do. And we wish you great success at it. So run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.